This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hi, this is Dave Musial, owner of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. Do you have a plumbing emergency? Call Four Seasons. An electrical emergency? Call Four Seasons. A heating or cooling emergency? Call Four Seasons. Same day hot water tank installation needed? Call Four Seasons. Need a whole home generator? Call Four Seasons. We guarantee same day installation on all heating, cooling, plumbing, and electrical needs. And no extra charge for nights, weekends, or holidays.
For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS.
Wow. What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Joining the show right now, covers the Mets for Newsday. Does a great job covering the Mets, and that's Tim Healy. Tim Healy, Al Cintron here in New York. How's it going?
I'm great, man. How are you?
I'm good, Tim. What's the mood been around the club so far this spring?
The mood's been pretty upbeat. It's been a pretty normal spring training. A couple injuries, a few new players, some guy named Juan Soto. That's been pretty exciting, of course. But the thing to me is how normal everything feels, because this is going to be year two of the David Stearns, Carlos Mendoza era. Last year, the leadership was new. A lot of the coaches were new. And it was all everybody getting to know each other and getting their feet under them. Then they had a great season last year, obviously, as we all watched. And now they're just back. And they have a routine and they're in the swing of things. They can get ready for the season without having to play catch-up on the organization and expectations and things like that. So the Mets are in a better spot now, I'd say, than they were a year ago in that sense.
What's the biggest difference from Carlos Mendoza's first spring training to this camp?
I will defer here to what Mendoza himself said was the biggest difference, because we asked him this early in spring training, and he said the best part is that he doesn't have to meet 20 new people every day, and then the next day, introduce himself to some of them again, forgetting he's already met them.
Oh, boy.
So I think the fact that he knows his way around the complex and he knows the whole roster definitely goes a long way.
And Juan Soto looks pretty damn good in a Met uniform, huh?
Yeah, he's been swinging a good two. So, it's just Grapefruit League play, of course. Doesn't mean a whole lot, but it's striking how natural it looks, Juan Soto in a Met uniform. So we're just 2 weeks away from the real thing, but we're getting there.
How concerned are the Mets with Brandon Nimmo's knee?
It seems like not very concerned. I would not be surprised, in fact, if he's back in the Grapefruit League lineup tomorrow or the next day. And with 2 weeks to go to till opening day, I think Nimmo will have enough time to be ready. That's certainly the expectation. That said, they didn't expect his knee soreness to linger this long to begin with. So you never know with these things. What's interesting about it is, last year, his foot bothered him a lot. This year, the knee popped up. And for a guy who, early in his career, dealt with a lot of injuries, and in the past 3 years has played at least 150 games every year, you sort of wonder what his 30s are going to look like and what the rest of his contract is going to look like. No major injuries yet, but some, red-ish flags popping up here over the last few months.
As far as Francisco Lindor goes, second in MVP last season, do you expect him to play 155 to 160 games this season, or is the organization going to give him more days off? And is he willing to take a day off here and there?
See, that last question is probably the most important variable. Carlos Mendoza, if it were strictly up to him, which, yes, technically it is, but you got to keep your players happy and respect what they want. If it were Mendoza's choosing exclusively, I think there would be more off days mixed in, maybe one, maybe two a month. But Francisco Lindor likes to play. He wants to play every game. He wants to play just about every inning. So my expectation is he'll be playing just about every game. I know Francisco and his wife are expecting another baby right around the start of the season. So we'll see what impact that has. You know, he doesn't always miss a game when his child is born. Sometimes he squeezes it in between games, yep. But that's definitely on the radar.
As far as the catching situation goes, with Francisco Alvarez being injured again, how concerned is the organization that this might be a yearly thing with him?
You know, that's a great question. I don't think there is a lot of concern along those lines because they're two freak things. This guy, Francisco Alvarez, very strong. They really like him as a catcher. And when he's behind the plate, he takes an absolute beating back there, it seems like. It seems like even more so than other catchers, and maybe that's just because I watch Francisco Alvarez more than I watch other catchers, but it seems like several times a week he's taking nasty foul tips or getting hit with a backswing, stuff like that. And then, lo and behold, the two times he gets hurt are sort of freak things related to being an offensive player. Last year he slipped running the bases, caught himself on his thumb, torn ligament, surgery, 8 weeks. The other day, batting practice, live batting practice on a practice field in spring training of all places, random swing, and his hamate bone goes. And sometimes the hamate bone just goes for hitters for no particular reason. Surgery needs that out. Now it's going to be a 6 to 8 week thing. So I don't think they're worried about him being injury prone or anything like that, because as far as physically behind the plate, the guy looks like he's made of adamantium. So I'm not too worried about it.
The catching situation, it's Luis Torrens and who?
That's a great question. The Mets have a couple of weeks to figure it out. They have three guys in-house right now who could do the job, who could win the job. None of them are exactly household names. They're Hayden Senger, who's been in the organization since 2018, Jackson Reitz, who was an off-season minor league signing, and Chris Williams, who is also a minor league off-season signing. Of those three, I would go with Hayden Senger, who knows the staff, who is very well thought of as a defensive catcher, has never hit much in the minors, but, you know, he'll be a backup catcher in that role, so you don't need a whole lot of offense necessarily from him. That said, there's a lot of time in this context, between now and opening day, so it's possible that the Mets pick somebody up on waivers late in spring training as other teams make their roster cuts. So the true backup catcher may well be somebody we don't know yet, somebody who's in another organization right now.
I just hope his name's not Tomas Nido. Don't do that. I keep seeing people putting it out there. Please, let's not go backwards. Let's go forward.
You know, he's with the Tigers on a minor league deal, and as I understand it, does not have an opt-out clause until June 1. So if I'm the Tigers and I have my two major league catchers, I would be very comfortable just stashing Tomas Nido in the minors until if and when you need him. So I don't know how much of an option that would realistically be for the Mets anyway.
All right, good. The back end of this rotation, you got McGill looking good, Canning's looking good, Blackburn's looking good. Who has the upper hand in terms of making this rotation with the opening team on opening day?
You know, the easiest answer, the simplest answer would be to go with Griffin Canning and Paul Blackburn and send Tyler McGill to the minors simply because you can send him to the minors. That said, you're right. McGill has looked excellent. He certainly has a lot of believers within the organization who, as we have seen, have given him chance after chance to figure it out at the major league level, which he hasn't totally done. So if the Mets still are enamored and want to give him a chance at the outset, then they can stick him in the rotation and put one of the other guys, probably Blackburn, maybe Canning, in the bullpen as a long man, spot starter, six starter sort of situation when they need one after a couple of weeks. So there's still a couple ways they can go, and all three may well be on the roster, but if only two are on the roster, it's probably going to be McGill in the minors.
To me, Tyler McGill reminds me of Daniel Jones, chance after chance after chance after chance.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got to get it done. It's sink or swim time.
Yeah, That's a great comp. I've lived in New York since 2018 when I started covering the Mets. And every August, right through this past August, the topic of conversation on FAN was whether Daniel Jones is the guy. If you have to talk about it that many Augusts in a row, then he's not the guy.
Amen to that. What's the timetable for Sean Manaea? How's he coming along with his injury?
That's a great question. He was due to get a follow-up MRI, I believe maybe literally today. So I think we'll have an update tomorrow on that. Leading into the MRI, it sounded positive. It sounded like his symptoms were going away with the oblique strain, and they just wanted to be ultra cautious, give him the extra couple days after he got the couple weeks. So that's why they waited till around now for the MRI. But it sounds like things have been going well, so my expectation is he'll be clear to throw second half of this week, and then he'll have to restart his own spring training and return to the team in that mid to late April timeframe.
Besides Edwin Diaz, you know, obviously he's the closer. What's the bullpen setup looking like for the sixth, seventh, and eighth inning?
I think the bullpen could be nasty this year. I think the Mets have a lot of guys. And a lot of guys, they have more guys they like than they have spots available. So setting up for Edwin Diaz are the two offseason signings, left-hander A.J. Minter, right-hander Ryan Stanek, who was so good for the Mets down the stretch and in the playoffs last year. At one point in October, basically was the circle of trust, just him, nobody else. So it was a good move on the Mets' part to bring him back. So there's your quote-unquote seventh, eighth, ninth inning guys, traditional. But then you have Jose Buto, who they really like in a multi-inning role. Daniel Nunez, who made a very strong impression last year before he got hurt.
Love him.
Seems like it, me too. He was so good. He seems like he's healthy now. That's a little tenuous, a little touch and go, just with the nature of his arm injury and his, frankly, history of arm injury. So if he's healthy, he's going to be on the roster. He's going to be in the bullpen. And that right there gives you five guys you really like. And then you fill it out with guys like Danny Young, who showed something last year. He'd be a great second lefty behind Minter. Max Kranick has been amazing in spring training. I genuinely think he's going to crack the opening day roster. So they got some guys back there.
Talking with Tim Healy, who covers the Mets, for Newsday. If you covered the Nets, you'd have a headache. Brett Beatty and Luis Angel Acuna, one of them make the roster, both make the roster. How's that looking in spring training with them?
So I really don't see Acuna making the team out of camp. One, they don't really have a spot for him. He's still a prospect. He needs to play every day, not sit on the bench and play part-time. Two, has not hit really at all during spring training. His OPS is in like the mid-500s. And three, was not good in AAA last year. And even though he was a lightning bolt for 2 weeks in September, amazingly filling in for Francisco Lindor down the stretch there while Lindor had the back injury, that does not totally erase what he did in AAA, which was a very mediocre at best season. So he's still got developing to do. He still has something to prove in the minors. I think Acuna should and will open the year in the minors. Beatty is a different question and an interesting question. I think he should be on the team because this is a guy who now is 25 years old. He has had the starting third base job twice. He has lost the starting third base job twice. And to me, it's time to see if he can figure it out and contribute in a part-time role. Maybe steal some playing time from somebody else somewhere along the way. You never know. So I think Beatty should be the utility infielder. Unfortunately, Nick Madrigal went down for the season. He was supposed to be in that spot, and he was a much more natural choice for it. Beatty, as we know, is not a shortstop. He's been playing some second, not exactly, you know, a natural second baseman, of course. He's a third baseman. So it's a little bit of an awkward fit roster-wise. But when you have a shortstop like Lindor, who, as we said, plays close to every inning, they can get away with it.
The DH situation, Winker, Marte, if Nimmo's not 100% ready to go to play the field, I can see him DH-ing every day until he's ready to go. How's that shaking out?
I could see that, too. The plan is to have Jesse Winker DH against right-handed pitchers, and Starling Marte DH against left-handed pitchers. So that would mean Winker most days, Marte some days. And that includes within a game if Winker's in there against a righty and then the other team goes to a lefty reliever late, Marte's going to slot in. Marte's going to get that at-bat late in the game. The Nimmo dynamic is a little interesting. Yes, if he is still building up or not quite 100%, good enough to play but could use the so-called half day off at DH, I could see the Mets doing that. You can just stick Jesse Winker in left field and put Nimmo at DH on that day, and that's pretty much fine. That actually makes a lot of sense depending on the state of Brandon Nimmo's knee 15 days from now.
Pete Alonso looks happy, huh?
Yeah, I'd be happy too if I was making $30 million this year. I'm already happy and I'm not making that much money. So it was a weird offseason for him. Free agency, suffice to say, probably didn't go the way that he expected. But he's been a very good soldier from day one of showing up at camp this year. Has not a whiff of whining or complaining or, thinking he got a raw deal. He seems happy to be with the Mets. Happy to be with the only team and organization he's ever known. He's got the franchise home run record on tap this summer. So Pete Alonso looks happy, and there are a lot of reasons for him to be happy.
Yeah, and I found it mind-numbing that people said he was the cancer in the clubhouse.
Yeah, I never really bought that.
Nah, neither did I. I had somebody on who said the same thing, that it was a bunch of BS. Who's impressed you the most with this right now in spring training, not named Juan Soto?
Not named Juan Soto impressed me the most. That's so hard to say because these games just don't matter that much, unfortunately. Let's see. Honestly, Jose Siri has looked really good. He's tied with Soto for most home runs on the team. He is gifted, let's say, in center field. I think he's going to be potentially a lot of fun to watch, sharing that center field role with Tyrone Taylor. We'll see how that unfolds over the next 6 months. But Jose Siri, the Mets picked him up for next to nothing in a trade with the Rays early in the offseason. The Harrison Bader replacement from last year. So he's been an interesting guy the last few weeks.
Yeah, and he also has the record for taking the longest to round the bases after hitting a home run.
Yeah, yep. Yes, he does. He certainly knows how to get under people's skin.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over, and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
And isn't afraid to do so. The key for him and the key for the Mets will be to make sure he's getting under the skin of other teams and not his own team. So this is a guy who, let's remember, has played for, I believe, 6 organizations in the last 5 years.
Yikes.
Plus 1 month. So it's been, he tends not to stay anywhere too long. So we'll see what happens with the Mets.
You got the Mets, you got the Phillies, you got the Braves. All things considered, if all three teams are healthy, how do you see it shaking out in the NL East?
If they're all healthy and we're talking on paper right now, I like the Braves. They had a down year last year after they got pummeled with injuries. And Acuna's supposed to come back. Strider's supposed to come back. They have a great rotation, even though they lost Max Fried. So the Braves were the division champs 6 years running until last year when the Phillies took the crown. So I like the Phillies' chance. I like the Braves' chance. That said, in reality, it's a total toss-up in a three-dog race.
The back end of the rotation, let's say it's a complete disaster. Will Brandon Sproat be with this team in 2025?
Brandon Sproat will be with the Mets in 2025 if he earns it. And that opportunity is right there for the taking for him. He shot through the minors last year, his first professional season, let's not forget. Yes, he's 24 years old. He's not some, I mean, that's maybe a tick old for a pitching prospect, but he's only one pro season into his career, got to AAA, struggled, and he thinks, and the Mets think, maybe figured it out a little bit over the offseason. So he'll get a chance to show that he is capable, that he is deserving of a major league opportunity. But if and when he does that in AAA, the Mets will make room for him, even if there isn't necessarily an opening. That's how good he is. That's how highly the Mets think of Brandon Sproat, who is really their top prospect in the whole organization.
Same thing with Blake Tidwell. Is he a starter or is he a reliever?
I think he's a starter. And him and Sproat, I had put into that same bucket, actually. Everything I just said for Sproat goes for Tidwell as well. He also struggled in AAA last year. Throws so hard. He's a tight end of a pitcher, really. So he's a big boy, throws hard. Great stuff. The Mets like them. Those guys, I'm willing to bet, both debut this year. But like I said, they'll have to earn it. It won't be given to them. Much like Christian Scott at this time last year was the closest to the majors pitching prospect who ended up debuting in early May after having a really good April. So, you know, everybody's timeline is a little different. So we'll see how it will unfold.
Yeah, that was the next question. Christian Scott, is the organization still high on him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, they were really high on him a year ago. He made a handful of starts in the majors and blew out his elbow, which they knew basically was an inevitability based on his history of elbow problems. So it's unfortunately a bit of a redshirt year for him. He's not going to pitch because of Tommy John late last summer, but they expect him back in 2026. And between him, Sproat, and Tidwell, the Mets are going to start having some good homegrown, inexpensive pitching coming up.
Last question for me, Tim. Talking to Tim Haley, who does a great job covering the Mets for Newsday. 2025 Mets, the over and under is 90.5 wins. You taking the under or the over? And do they? And how far do they get in the and do they make the playoffs, win a division? How far?
I think they snag a wild card spot, and I would go slightly under. But honestly, 90.5 seems pretty fair.
Yeah, Vegas, they somehow always get it right and take all my money. So, Tim, thanks for the conversation. I appreciate having you on.
You got it.
Thanks, Tim.
Have a good one.
You as well.